My name's Alex Webb. I'm here on the behalf of the Wellcome Trust. It is the 30th of August 2009. Could you please state your full name, your date of birth, and where you come from?
Cassandra Morris, 17th of the 5th, 66, and I was born in Carmarthen.
Where did you first hear about the project?
I went to the exhibition at the National Gallery, which was the shortlists for the 4th Plinth project.
Mm-hmm. And what inspired you to take part?
Well, when I went to that exhibition, I thought, if it's Gormley, I'll enter, because it's a chance to do something different, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you could kick yourself if you didn't go for the chance.
And are you a follower of Gormley's work?
Well, yeah, I went to St Helens last year, see Field of Britain when it was re-exhibited, and I came down to the Haywood a few years ago.
Yeah.
I first saw a statue of his that was at the Dome. It's still outside the O2 Arena now,
okay. And
I didn't get it at all.
Yeah,
and I went back and thought, I can't see a human in there at all. And
yeah.
And I got the picture and I couldn't see it. And actually I went on the Thames last year and I finally realised what it was.
Yeah.
But it's interesting.
It's great.
And the Haywood exhibition was fascinating.
Mm.
Did you go to that?
No.
So all kinds of things. But there was one thing, he had a cube full of white smoke called blind mice.
Yeah, I heard about that. I think that's it.
But you think, this can't...
What was that experience like? Experience?
Well, I mean, I was outside and I thought, this is a laugh. You must be able to see. It can't be that disorienting, and it is that disorienting.
Yeah.
It's very off-putting. I actually came back down to London and went to see it again.
Mm-hmm.
So that's quite
fascinating. How do you think this project relates to that piece or into his other works, do you think?
Well, I think this it's more like Field of Britain in that there's far more individual participation, because that was done by lots of separate people and represented lots of other people, whereas a lot of the things in the Haywood exhibition were about seeing Gormley in different guises.
Mm.
Of course, Field of Britain and his other fields that he's done in different countries are much more about separate people, so in a way it's harking back to some of the things he did before. But I think Angel of the North is the thing that's got him most publicity, and this is now the thing that's garnering most publicity for him, so it'll make people think it's not just about him having statues of himself around the place.
Yeah. What do you plan to do on the plinth, and why?
I'm going to read a ghost story, out of copyright ghost story. And it just seemed to be something that you might do at 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking about the mass observation project at some point. I thought, well, if I get picked out for a Saturday morning slot, I'll read a newspaper, because that's what I'd be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd be asleep now, but reading a story might be something I conceivably do.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll do that, and I'm going to talk about Tysabri, which is a drug that's it's licensed in the UK, it's NICE approved, but it's not really being prescribed as much as it should be. And there are, I think, three reasons for that. One, some people don't want to take it because it's risky. But I think a lot of people just aren't aware of it.
Could you explain?
So this is a drug that is used to treat, but not to cure, multiple sclerosis. So multiple sclerosis is a neurological condition.
Mm-hmm.
It affects 100,000 people in the UK. And there are different forms, including a form called relapsing remitting. Now, people with relapsing remitting, they have periods where they have a relapse or a flare, and because it's a neurological condition, it can affect different things. You know, people could find themselves unable to see, unable to walk, unable to control their bladder, all kinds of different things.
Mm.
And then they have periods where they're disease-free, relapsing and remitting.
Mm.
And some people have a rapidly evolving form of that. And Tysabri was a clinical trial, and it showed that it reduced the rate of relapses by 67%, which is pretty darn good. And your relapses can also build up disabilities, and it's also been shown to reduce the build-up of disabilities by 42%.
Right.
So they're pretty good figures. And it doesn't cure disabilities that people already have. It stops them progressing. And there are probably 2,000 people in the UK that are eligible for it because they have a rapidly evolving form of this. But only about 200 people, that's one in 10, are getting it. And when we hear about NICE, we hear about so many drugs that haven't been approved by NICE, and this is one that's actually been approved by NICE, and people still aren't getting it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are probably three reasons why people aren't getting it.
Yeah.
One is lack of awareness, and I think that being on HIM may raise awareness.
Yeah.
Second is that people don't want to take it. There are some potentially very nasty side effects with it. I listened to an interview with a woman who said, well, I'm going to be disabled without Tysabri. I'll run the risk that that might make me disabled earlier. So because it does have some risks, then people might not want to take it. So that's awareness, personal preference, but there is the funding aspect as well. So PCT, primary care trusts have 3 months to implement NICE guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
It's been NICE approved for a lot longer than 3 months, but not all of them
mm-hmm.
are letting people have it. I mean, it is expensive, and it also has to be administered by... It is expensive. It's £2,000, I think, a shot, and you take one a month.
Wow.
No, that's too much. It's 14,000 in total. So it's just over 1,000 a pop. Yes,
but
it is expensive. NICE have made the assessment that people that take the relapsing remitting presumably going to be less likely to work, and this is the cost benefit is something that NICE take into account. And it does require administration, so somebody has to be there. So, I mean, one of the things I want to ask people that look online and people that are there is spread the word, because you might not know anyone with MS, but you probably know someone who knows someone with MS.
Yeah.
It's 100,000 people in the UK that have it, not necessarily this particular form, but you can spread the word. And write to your MP, your primary care trust. I'm going to put up a web address as well, and the MS Society, which is organising the campaign, have given me a t-shirt as well. I was thinking it's too cold to wear a t-shirt, and the guy that's out there before is wearing absolutely nothing, not even socks, which I think is mad. He will regret the socks. And I think that it would be very easy to think it doesn't matter to me, but NICE was supposed to remove the postcode lottery.
Mm-hmm.
We know that NICE don't allow a lot of drugs that people generally think they should do. So if NICE are saying yes and the PCTs are saying no, you're almost scuppered both ways. Either NICE say no, or your primary care trust doesn't pay for it, and it could be you or someone that you care about that's not getting a drug that could make a difference to them.
I think it's a brilliant way to I think it's a great way to, you know, and I think that's the thing with the project, you know, being a platform and, you know, giving that opportunity to people to voice their views. Would you say it represents the UK?
Well, it represents potentially. Well, there are 2,000 people that are presumably eligible for this, and about 200 have got it. So that's not. It's 1,800 people. It's not a lot. It's fewer people than will be standing on the plinth. But it is people that could potentially benefit.
Sure.
And everyone likes a ghost story, don't they?
Yeah. So. So, can you tell us about the ghost story? Is there any particular one you chose this one?
Well, I wanted to do something by M.R. James, but he's not out of copyright.
Okay.
And The Signalman is something that Charles Dickens wrote, and it's a really good ghost story and out of copyright. I'm not going to be telling people it's by Charles Dickens before I start reading it, because I think it's quite a surprise.
Okay.
I think Charles Dickens, people might think it's a bit boring.
Yeah.
So I'll do that. I'll do my little Tysabri spiel. And then one by Mark Twain, which was chosen a lot because it's out of copyright and the amount of time I think I've got left in the hour it fits. And then if I, depending on how the time goes, I've got a very short one by Saki.
Alright, great. A big one on the plant, do you have any hopes or fears, expectations?
I'd quite like if I didn't get wet, but I think I may well be about to get wet because all my... bits of cardboard about to Tysabri are going to get soaked, and so is my book.
You have to take a brolly out.
I've got a cagoule.
We've got some spare brollies.
I don't think I'd be able to hold the book and a brolly. So, and I've got a megaphone that belts on, so I've got that hand free again.
Who would you say you're doing this for? Would you say you're doing this for yourself, essentially?
I went for the competition without thinking really about what I was going to do up there. If you read my plinth profile, it says I've got not a clue what I'm going to do, and that's what I wrote 55 days ago, and I haven't changed it.
Yeah.
And I think I only decided in the past few days that this is what I was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I did think about doing something for Oxfam, but because I volunteer there as well, but their big campaign at the moment is about climate change, and I like my creature comforts a bit too much to be able to do that with good conscience.
Yeah. Could you tell us a little bit about your background and just maybe, you know, where you're from? And
I was born in Carmarthen, grew up in the northeast of England, quite away from the Angel of the North, but a bit further south. I live near Manchester, a place called Macclesfield. I work in computing. I go to the theatre a lot. I love going to the theatre. I moved house 6 weeks ago.
What was that? Must have been stressful, was it?
I don't know, it wasn't too bad because I had other things to think about. So if I was worrying about work, you know, I think, well, I've got that plenty thing to think about. Because finding out about the two was very close in time. And also work was a bit peculiar because my job won't exist much longer, so all of those were happening. And they actually made it very unstressful.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you started worrying about one thing, you thought, that's nothing to worry about, you've got other things to worry about. And then once you think that, you don't worry about anything. So, of course now, when this is gone and I've moved house, I'll start worrying about work.
And what kind of computing do you
I do support. This is a bit inarticulate because the company I work with, there's quite a few constraints about what I can say, so I'm trying to think about this a bit more carefully. But basically I try and make sure the computer systems keep running, but not so much hands-on myself, more managerial.
What is most important in your life?
Christianity.
Yeah. Mm. Could you talk about you know, your religious side of life?
Okay, I'm a Christian. I go to a Methodist church. Methodism isn't the important bit, it's believing. It's made a huge difference to my life to know that, to understand properly what Christ did for us all, and it makes everything okay.
Mm-hmm. And is that, could you tell us a little bit more? Just as a child or?
As a child, my parents sent me off to Sunday school, but they didn't believe. A friend nagged them into sending me and my brother.
Okay.
I suppose looking back, it was useful because when I did believe, then I remembered a lot of stuff from the past. I didn't believe and I stopped going as a teenager. It always seemed a bit ridiculous to me that God could become human, because the temptation in the desert, well, he was God, so what was the big temptation about? And it just seemed ridiculous. And then one day, it was actually Good Friday, I finally got it and understood why. The significance of the fact that you have a God who would curtail his power so much to save us.
Yeah. So was there a turning point when you kind of decided?
Yeah, it happened within a morning. Yeah.
And you just woke up and it was.
No, I came down. I'm the kind of person that has the telly on all the time. The telly was on, and it was a film. Can't remember what it was, and the film was showing the life of Jesus, not surprisingly, as it was a Good Friday, and it was the temptation in the desert. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I finally got it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a long journey. took me a long time to get communion. In fact, I think I was over 40 before I took my first communion. That was quite a significant thing. And I was confirmed also post 40. It's a lot longer than my reluctant, recalcitrant trips to Sunday school. I used to, on Sunday mornings, I'd lie in bed and pretend that I wasn't at work yet, so I didn't have to go to church.
What is the main thing you'd say about yourself? And if you had to get to your friends to describe you, what would they say?
Well, one another makes you put three words down.
Yeah.
I think Christian was one. I think procrastinator was another, which probably fits with me not having decided what I was going to do until quite late in the day. I think disorganised might be another. I came here without my photo pass.
Oh, hey.
So that all fits. I did actually do something called Joe Harry once, which is interesting. You get a number of adjectives and ask friends to circle the three that you think they think is most like you. Mm. Lots of people put clever, which was a surprise.
Really? Why did you say that?
I work with a lot of clever people.
Okay.
And I wouldn't have thought that what I do in my day-to-day job stands out particularly. I mean, I work with a lot of people who have got doctorates.
Mm.
Amazing how many people with doctorates say that it's nothing. I just think, how on earth can you even do something like that and then dismiss it? Yeah, I work with a lot of very clever people.
Yeah.
I think people think I'm hard working, except people who know me really well who think I'm lazy. So my husband and my brother and my mother think I'm disgracefully lazy.
And lastly, do you think the staying on the plane will have an effect in your life? Will it resonate with you in some way?
I don't think so, really. I try and do things that are different if an opportunity comes up. People at work may have watched me, they may not have watched me. People may ask about the ghost stories. I think reading ghost stories will surprise people I work with.
Yeah, it's definitely something new. We haven't had it. So
yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
No, I'm afraid not.
Oh, that's okay. Thank you so much for the interview.
Okay.
Thank you.